Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hey, good morning, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Yeah, you get enough rest?
I got enough rest last night. I don't know, man.
No, man, that's good. That's good, man. I'm just asking if you got enough rest. You don't have to go any further than that.
Okay.
You look refreshed, so that's a good thing.
You do too, Earl.
Yeah.
I'm liking the outfit.
You even sound refreshed, Kurt. Yeah. You've got inflection in your voice.
You're like a normal person, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so by now you ought to know that voice. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. You know, it's fall came, when was that, Friday at 4 or something like that in the afternoon? And now it's continued. And it continued all weekend.
Well, you know, it's one thing to the beauty of having us in this picture window is we can watch nature take place right before our eyes. And I'm watching this squirrel burying. You just about know what time of the year it is. They know.
I read a thing that suggested that squirrels only find about 25% of the stuff they bury.
Really?
Well, I'm surprised.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I can only find about 25% of the things I put away.
25%?
Yeah, I got this cleaning person who comes, and she decides to put everything away, and her version of away is just out of sight.
Yeah.
But it's not where I necessarily would put it out of sight, so I have to recover every 2 weeks from the cleaning process.
Well, you know, Sam, Andy, their body clocks and systems must automatically tell them.
Talking about squirrels,
no. Animals. Yeah. I'm sure it's not.
Yeah.
It's not the weather. It's just that it tells them it's time.
No, you know what happens? They notice that football's on TV.
And people aren't as much around.
Yeah, squirrels notice when the Packers are on. They decide, you know what, it's time for me to tend to the nuts.
It's amazing. I'm watching him, and he's digging. He's got it in his mouth, so clearly that is what he's doing. And
hey, Earl.
What?
Get a life.
Oh, man. Trying to get. Well, I thought I had a life, and I was watching the Packer game on yesterday, and what a boring football.
Well, you know, I think if you really like football, you like defense.
Defense.
Yeah, and you know, that's the way the old Packers, you know, when Lombardi was around, the 21-17 was a big scoring game.
Well, 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, defense was a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And the middle linebackers, you know, Ray Nitschke and people were superstars. And
and
it's kind of come back. You know, we were talking off the air, but the level of athleticism of the defenders these days, particularly like the edge rushers.
Right.
And some of the, you know, the defensive tackles, some of them are superhuman, really.
Yeah, well, those are the guys who make the money.
Yeah, and now the middle linebackers are back. DeAndre Campbell and this guy Walker. Both of them are walkers, so super athletes.
Well, both of those guys are rookies. And
well, DeAndre isn't, but he's young.
Yeah, well, the first two, the Packers' first two picks this year were linebackers. And, you know, very athletic. So the other part of it is they're young.
Uh-huh.
And so they don't get paid a whole lot of money. You know, they will at some point in time, but you can get those guys. And people wonder why they...
Well, you know, defense is a little bit more of an instinctive athletic process than offense. So, you know, like an offensive receiver, offensive quarterbacks.
There's a design already.
No, it takes a while for them to figure it all out.
Right.
Running backs, no, they can step right in because they just have to know which hole to hit and they have to have some style points. The same is true of defensive linemen. They have an assignment. They carry it out. It's not as much of reads. You know, they're not reading stuff. And on the offensive side, it's much more, it's different.
You know, all of that is just so complex. You know, it's hard for me to imagine going back to the old times you know, they've got all analytics and all that stuff involved now. It's egghead. And so, you know, you really have to know a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I played football in high school, and for a little while, my son, after I retired, talked me into going back to coach with him at the high school I went to. And when I played football, you know, there was a 23 off-tackle dive.
Yeah, right.
And you knew that was the two-back, the half-back, through the three-hole, and it was a dive play, and the offensive line blocking was basically take the man in front of you and make a hole out of, you know, we're at the three-hole. Now, when I tried to coach, it was like unbelievably complicated. The calls for the plays were very complex. The reads for the offensive linemen were as complicated as what a quarterback had to do back in the day. You know, it's very much more complicated.
It's kind of amazing that you say that, because I remember I played split end and defensive back in, I recall, 84-5, which was a square out. 82-2, which was a slant.
The play call told you everything you needed to know.
Where you had to be.
Yeah.
And it was very simplistic, and yet it worked.
Uh-huh.
You know, but today, like I said, you know, they've made it an art. And so you need to understand so many things, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Like you said, on the defense, they react to what's going on with the offensive play, but the offensive guys, they got to be pretty brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive, the safeties and the D-backs have a fair amount of reaction to do, particularly the safeties.
Right.
And the linebackers have a bunch of reads. They've got to do a bunch of things. But most of the rest of the assignments are straightforward for defenders. So defenders can come from college, make it through into playing quite quickly.
Right.
It's harder on the offensive side.
Well, you know, you look and Rodgers threw an interception yesterday, which is so rare. And when he threw the interception, they explained what happened. And sure enough, a safety had disguised what he was going to do and trick Rodgers, because he didn't do what Rodgers
I think that was more like old time football. It was, you know, a safety who looked like he was in a too deep zone, and then he came up and that was a function of the quarterback reading and what have you. But yeah, football has just gotten very, very complicated. But you were saying, and I think you're right, defense is catching up. I think it has something to do with the fact that young talent is. It has to do with the salary cap. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at the salaries on the offensive side of the ball, and then on the defensive side, there aren't as many huge salaries that command such a huge chunk. So you're able to invest in more quality defenders on the offensive side. You only get a shot at a couple of you. So on the Packers side, we've got the left tackle and the quarterback. And as far as receivers are concerned, we couldn't afford to keep the star receiver. So now we've got, you know, so we've decided we can have more pedestrian receivers.
Well, Sandy, that's because you're paying quarterbacks $40 million.
Right.
And there's a salary cap.
Right.
And
that's my point. So the salary cap, I think, is swinging some of the pendulum towards the defenders, because you can have higher quality players at a lower average salary than on the offensive side, where you've got, you know, like the left tackles in the league earn more than just about any defender.
And then let's be clear. I was telling somebody yesterday, what was the guy's name, All-Pro? Play with the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Can you tell me the position?
A defensive back, number 24, Woodson.
Oh, yeah.
He played.
Charles Woodson.
He played 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unbelievable for anybody to play 20 years. He did at defensive back.
Yeah.
And so he made the most money as he got older. That's never going to happen anymore, because they're not going to keep a guy that long and pay him all that money when they can get a young guy for little or nothing who's, you know, just as athletic maybe more athletic. And
well, look at I think the highest paid defender, or at least the highest paid cornerback in the league, is Jerry Alexander.
Right? Yeah, $23 million, right. Which is surprising to me.
Yeah, it's a huge number. Now he's hurt.
Yeah,
and Rasul Douglas, the guy who's
played pretty good yesterday.
And so, you know, it's just a different. It's really a different process. But all I'm saying is that I think on the defensive side, you can afford higher quality because you don't have to pay them quite as much. And on the offensive side, you have to give up quality. Look at the offensive line. Every time, you know, we only can keep one veteran star offensive lineman. You have to cut the rest. We've done that across the years.
Josh Sitton and
Treader.
We keep
cutting guys who are, you know, the star guards, because I guess guards are easy to get.
Well, you know, the other part of it is back during the days when running backs were the highest paid athletes.
Right.
Now, they're not, because how often does a running back even enter into the offensive play?
Well, and also, you know, they have a 4-year contract when you're drafted,
right?
And you get paid your draft wage for 4 years, and then you move. Well, running backs only last about 7 years in the league, and then they get
shipped. If they're lucky.
Yeah. So
right.
That costs running back as a position and a compensation level a lot of money.
I've got a friend who played pro football, and he groomed his sons to be football players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is in his second year of college. And the other one is on a high school level, but he wouldn't let them play running back because he said their careers would be so short. He's got them playing defensive back, you know, even though they had talent to play running back, but he's already thinking ahead of the game. Running backs take too much punishment and don't get paid the high rate.
Yeah.
But anyway, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. We got a lot to talk about this morning, as always. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, before we get into our subject matter, yesterday out of nowhere, storm came up. Look, and those are the kind of storms you would get during the summer sometimes.
Yeah,
in fact,
I have a convertible I got, and I had the top down. It was at my son's house, and I walked outside. It was raining. I was like, oh, God, I left the top down. Now, happily, that was just the first sprinkle. That was like
right.
That was the harbinger of the storm to come, and so I put the top up and committed to myself that I would henceforth always always put the top up, because if it had been down for the storm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the amazing thing, Sandy, is you just saw these storms come out of nowhere. They weren't even predicted, and they were heavy storms with hail. Yeah, and hail, and in some places did some damage, spotty places.
Well,
down
high winds and trees. I mean,
60 miles an hour.
Yeah,
you know, and in the twinkling of an eye, it was gone. But in the places where it stopped, it did some damage.
Well, you know, When I was growing up, weather was not such a big source of news. And now you could say, well, it's just, it's the news media has decided to make weather a big source of news, but I don't think that's the case. I think that clearly weather has become a big issue or a big problem, and there's something afoot in the globe here that's maybe causing this, but a lot of people would deny that.
So you remember Albert the Alley Cat and what was the guy's name, the weather guy on Channel 6? You remember Albert the Alley Cat?
Yeah, but was that the guy with the toupee? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I apologize to all those out there with toupees.
But
there was a weather guy who had a very obvious rug.
Yeah, but the point we're making is that's how simplistic weather used
Excuse
to
me,
be.
Excuse me, Connor. I didn't mean that.
that's how simplistic the weather used to be. They would not have a whole lot of time and the energy, but now if you look at how elaborate the sets are, what they're able to do with the technology and all the color and all the, they spend as much time on the weather as they do the news.
Well, I mean, but I'm talking about the fact that there is in fact some dramatic weather. You know, we've got a hurricane a week going. You know, the hurricanes are profoundly stronger. You know, almost every year New Orleans experiences a hurricane
right.
that was stronger than the one they've ever had before. And that seems to be happening in Florida. And the level of storm water that we get in a rain is, like, immense.
Yeah, but Fiona went all the way up to Canada did damage.
Yeah, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, I mean, that's not ever been the case that a hurricane made it from all the way down where it was all the way up to Nova Scotia and had a punch, right? I mean,
yeah.
it still had a punch in here.
Yeah, oh, it did a lot of damage in Nova Scotia. So, yeah, I mean, clearly weather has become dramatic, and around the world, you know, we have hurricanes, they have typhoons, but there's news about typhoons all over the world,
too. So for people who still push back, Sandy, against all of this, and I don't know what they need to see, what more they need to see to know.
Well, this is a nice segue. You know what?
Yeah.
On Mondays, I'm supposed to think about what we're going to talk about. I came in this morning and told Earl that I wanted to talk about denial. You know, there's this psychological kind of concept that people are in denial when they ignore something that's so obvious about themselves. He's in denial about whatever, you know. And
right.
And then it looks to me like the American public is in denial in a broad sort of way about many, many things. But one of the most obvious ones is this concept of global climate change. And, you know, people want to get all bound up in their socks about whether global climate change is caused only by human beings or whether it's a natural phenomena. Well, I think it's pretty easy to look at the science and say whether, in fact, we're in a global cycle that would be moving towards global warming, the conduct of human beings has accelerated it. And by accelerating global warming, we're creating a lot of weather crises that are going to be extremely difficult for the economies and the people of the world to absorb. So what's the prudent thing? Well, you would think that human beings would look at this and say, well, human beings ought to be doing everything we can to slow down this process of global warming so we can catch up to it in terms of how we compensate for it. And, you know, how do we compensate for it? Like depopulating Florida. You know, there's all these, you know, when you look at the actual outcomes of global warming, it's going to take some massive human reactions. And the notion that we should just ignore it and let it happen to the extent that human behavior could be modified to slow it down is crazy. It's denial, okay? Because we continue to have lots of people, Senator Mnuchin, others who seem to be looking at the world and saying, don't worry about global warming. Let's worry about the coal miner jobs.
Yeah, I know. He's still at it. And he's frustrated because others won't go along with him.
Well, it's further evidence, I've said on earlier shows, the extent to which the status quo is in control, and it's particularly in control of American policy. And this is a particularly evident piece of evidence about status quo. You know, people who want the status quo to continue will say that there is no global warming, because obviously to solve for global warming, or to at least to slow it down, requires a significant change in the status quo.
Yeah, well, money.
Well, it requires a change in behavior.
Yeah, well,
you know, the cars that I like to drive, the way we manufacture things using fossil fuels, the use of fossil fuel, the way we farm. There's all kinds of behaviors that we need to modify to at least slow down the cause of global warming from a human side.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can join us. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. And Sandy, it's your thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were
talking. Do what you want to do.
Do what you want to do.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God.
I can't tell you who to sock it to. Oh. But anyway, go ahead.
You really want me to have complete freedom here, huh? Okay, Katie, bar the door. Let's call the FCC. No, I wanted to talk a little bit about the various ways in which I think America and American politics are in denial. And, one of the most obvious ones, just based on the news every day, relates to the condition of the global climate change and the danger that poses to many Americans, but to many people around the world. And the rest of the world seems to be far more alert to this concept of global warming, and far more driven to make some current day sacrifice, to sacrifice something today to improve tomorrow with respect to the global climate. But in America, we seem to be totally unwilling to sacrifice today to improve tomorrow about anything. And one of those things that's most obvious, I think, is global climate change. But I think there are others as well. I mean, we fool ourselves. We have callers who call in when we're talking about how we'd like to improve America in various ways. And they're basically, it's the America love it or leave it concept. And the retort is that America is this place of great opportunity, and all you have to do is look at the number of refugees and immigrants who are lining up at the door to come into America, and that tells you that America is great, and that for you to criticize America in light of all that greatness is to be unpatriotic. Well, you know, my view of patriotism is we want to make America as great as it can be. I'd like to restore to America, for instance, the American dream. And most of those people who would call in would talk about the American dream, but I think you mentioned off the air before we started today something about the death of the American dream, and I think that's quite evident. We haven't played taps for it yet.
Right.
But, and Connor played taps last Friday, and he doesn't have to play taps today for it. But clearly the American dream is not as available as it used to be. And whereas plenty of immigrants come to America and can move the ball forward further in terms of achieving their dreams than they could in the place that they left, it's become much harder to achieve the American dream. I mean, what are the elements? How would you define the American dream?
Well, what it had always been when I was a young boy and a young man was to be able to afford and own your own home.
Well, it was a home. Yeah, well, there were other elements.
To be able to buy a new car.
Right.
To be able to go on a vacation, to save a little money, to send your kids to college. That was the dream that was available, 40 years ago.
Right.
I mean, and obtainable.
It was obtainable.
For most Americans.
Oh, yeah. Middle class America had a home, had a car.
Yeah.
Their kids went to college.
Even without a college degree, you could live that middle class lifestyle and live the American dream.
But you know, regardless of what education level it took to achieve the American dream, there were a large number of Americans, a majority share of Americans, who in 1965 were living the American dream, owned a home, had a car, could save enough for vacations, their kids could go to college, they had health care at work, they had security and safety in their home. That was America.
Lived in safe neighborhoods.
Yeah, yeah. And now if you unbundle America, how many of those elements are easily available? Let's take the median income home. So that, I think we found that out earlier in one of the earlier shows, that about $75,000 a year is the median income of a household, meaning in America that basically means two income earners in all likelihood that earn $75,000 a year. And that's the median, meaning that half of American families earn less than $75,000 a year, and half earn more. So we understand that a substantial number of Americans live in families that earn less than $75,000 a year. How achievable is the American dream if you're earning $75,000 a year? Because we've already established that you're living paycheck to paycheck at $75,000 a year, no question about it. In almost every metropolitan area in the United States, $75,000 is hanging on with your fingertips, and it's not enough to, for instance, unless you have health care via your employer, which is rarer and rarer in terms of the number of employers providing health care, you're having to provide for your own health care. You don't have child daycare, but both parents work, because that's the average family. And so the American dream for half of the families in America, at least, is basically unachievable.
Well, you know, Sandy, the delusional part of what you're talking about is you probably have the other half of the people in this country not even believing what you just said, or not even focusing, not paying any attention whatsoever,
right?
Because they don't see those people, and because they're fortunate and blessed to be able to not have to worry about those things, so they're not aware. And so because they live in a different paradigm, they don't realize what others are going through.
Right. This denial thing is not so much about one's own circumstance. It's about the circumstances of others in this community. It's this loss of connection to community. It's the loss of understanding about what is going on in the community. So that we have plenty of callers who call in who are, in fact, experiencing the American dream, and they've done it based by dint of their own hard work. Many of them might be in what would be called blue-collar professions. But they believe that it's available to anyone who wants to roll up their sleeves and do their work. And that the facts don't bear that out,
but
the facts are different.
But the fallacy is that other people aren't working hard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people act like those people who are making under the $75,000 a year aren't going to work every day and working hard. They are, and it's just that doing what they're doing. I was talking with a guy the other day, one of my Republican friends, and he was saying, and I was telling him about the $15 an hour, and he was saying, well, that's a starting wage. Nobody stays at $15 an hour. I said, well, you're mistaken.
Yeah.
There are people who work in places like Walmart. That's their job. They're not in a position to move up anywhere, that's where they're going to be. And he said, no, that's not the case. That's a beginning job for people. And he just could not see, because he's a trades guy.
Right.
He could not see that there are people who are in that situation, and that's where they'll be for the majority of their life, unless somehow the wage scale at Walmart climbs, they're not going to wind up
Well, incidentally,
move into a position.
It just did climb to $15 an hour. I mean,
yeah, but
the fact is that if you look 3 years ago, Walmart wasn't paying $15 an hour.
So $15 an hour, Sandy, times, you know, 35 hours a week, because the other side of that equation is they'll never give the people 40 hours a week, because then they'll get benefits.
Benefits, exactly.
And so these people are locked without getting any benefits. $15 an hour with no benefits, Sandy, is, I'm sorry,
well, that's, you know, it's 1,500 hours a year, okay? 30 hours a week is 1,500 hours a year. Many of them work 30 to 35.
$1,500 a month.
$1,500, yes.
$15,000 a year.
I'm sorry.
$1,500 a month.
1,500 hours.
Oh, 1,500 hours, yeah.
Times 15, you know, that you have to do that math.
30, what?
I think it's 25.
$25,000. 25.
22.5.
For somebody who's...
So if both father and mother are working at that level, they're going to earn $45,000 a year, and they're working 60 hours a week between them and their kids. You know, I'm just saying, these people are scratching hard to get by. This median family and the people who live beneath the median family income. First of all, the average is that both of parents are working. So this tradesman who thinks that everyone's on an upward moving gravy train and they're just starting at 15, it just isn't in the reality. Has he gone to a Walgreens store and been waited on at a Walgreens store? Because are those people on an upwardly mobile, or are they working 30 to 35 hours a week and going to get the same pay every year until the minimum pay goes up?
Well, you know, Sandy, the fallacy is that we've got a lot of people who are lazy and shiftless and don't want to work. And I think that's the exception, not the rule. There's so many people who are working, all you can do is exist, right? These are people who don't own homes. Their American dream is, am I going to be able to get a bus pass? Am I going to be able to pay my rent? Am I going to be able to put food on the table, and then when the winter rolls around, am I going to be able to pay my gas bill?
Yes.
That's their life cycle.
And there is also another element to the American dream, which is involved with something like a nuclear family that's pushing the kids, that's sacrificing on behalf of their children and moving their kids up. I mean, it is true that immigrants come here and the first generation of Americans, the second generation cohort that is the children of immigrants, are highly successful, and they continue to be. And it's because those parents come here and they basically,
they've sacrificed their lives.
Sacrificed their lives on behalf of their children. And if more Americans behave that way for their children, we might have a better shot at it. But first of all, we don't have, you know, there's a whole bunch of children in America born into circumstances that don't involve those parents, okay? And so that's a social problem. And we also have something else going on, which is whereas Africans from Nigeria come to America and their second generation families are very successful, African Americans who live in the central city and suffer the childhood and the circumstance of the inner city are not as successful.
So let me respond to that, because the Africans who come here from Nigeria and other places, many of them are highly educated.
Yes,
and so when they come here, I would say they're the cream of the crop of those who are successful in Nigeria, and they come here and they're highly educated, and so they can assimilate inside of this society when they're highly educated, and they're the best. When I say best, I mean of their society, meaning as far as education is concerned. And you see that.
No, I'm in total agreement with you. And however, there are those who would make the argument that I was just describing, that this cohort does so well, why doesn't the other? Well, they're coming from a completely different background.
Yeah, well,
and they come from a different familial situation and a different sociological situation, and so the denial The American political denial is to deny the existence of the circumstances in America which cause the median families in America and those who live below the median to be scratching it out and not achieving the American dream.
So when we get back from the break, I want to talk about, you know, why Americans, in spite of what we are talking about right now, don't want to believe that. And somehow I want to tie all of this into people not succeeding in this country because they don't want to. They don't work hard enough. They don't try hard enough. And in the face of the statistical information that you can give and others can give and you can find anywhere, they dismiss that and say it's because people just don't want to work. You know, I know that it's not about people not wanting to work hard. Working hard now sometimes doesn't even get you the way you need to get because of the way the system is set up. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy is and we're talking about, you know, denial. You know, Sandy, you want to?
Well, we talk. You know, people are. I'm in denial, right? I'm in denial that I'm an old guy. I continue to think that I'm about 40 years old. So I'm in denial, and I think that we've got a body politic here in America that is, in many respects, in denial. We have this concept of American exceptionalism, and it seems to have paint with a broad brush that suggests that everything about America is exceptional. We've got this concept that we were just talking about the last section about the American dream. And people talk about the American dream and how people are coming from all over the world to come here and achieve the American dream. And we're in denial about the extent to which it's much, much harder in today's world for anybody to achieve the American dream. You know, and some of that has to do, I think, with this fact that America doesn't have a safety net. And if you want to achieve the American net, which the American dream, which, you know, we, as you described it earlier, is a home and a car and vacation and a college for the kids, and but underlying that also is like having health care, so you're healthy and you can be confident that you'll have health care and that you'll have personal safety and security, and that you'll be able to retire. That was all part of the American dream. You didn't have to have $1 million. You just needed to have that kind of a life, and that was a very good life, and it was a good enough life for anybody to feel prosperous and to feel adequate. Now, people can still have a car, okay, but it's much more expensive, and used cars in particular are much more expensive. Vacations? No. The extent to which that median family and those who are earning less than the median are able to vacation is way, way minimized.
Well, so,
and the extent to which that double income earning household can afford to leave their job where they're paid by the hour and don't get paid vacations.
So let's look, excuse me. So let's just look at Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
Where it used to be that if you could take your kids to Disneyland, that was the highlight, right? That meant that you were a middle-class person, you were living the American dream. I'm going to take my children to Disneyland. In the 50s, in the 60s.
Right.
In the 70s. I mean, you were doing it, man, you know. When you could
if you
do
go
that.
To Disneyland now, you realize how expensive.
$10,000, $15,000.
Yeah.
You know, which is, come on.
No family struggling to earn $75,000 a year, probably without paid vacation. So if they take a vacation, they're going to be foregoing the hourly wages that are getting them to $75,000. None of them are going to be able to afford to spend $10,000 to $15,000 to go to Mickey Land.
So let's even look at blue collar workers. It used to be, you know, you could have a cottage up north, a ski boat, a snowmobile. I mean, that was commonplace for people in the middle class, right? Especially in Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Well, sure.
Places could, like that.
And you could send your kids to college because in 1960 or 65, the University of Wisconsin's tuition was about $100 a semester. And so, you know, this college was achievable for your kids. There was more state support being provided to the schools. They weren't as tuition dependent as they are now. I mean, if you look at the history of how public colleges and universities in Wisconsin have been supported by the state, it swung from the state providing financial support to the schools to now the states provide almost no financial support to the schools, and the schools are almost entirely dependent on the tuitions they receive from the students who go there, and because of that they charge much higher tuitions, and because of that students who go to college from poorer families have to undertake student debt.
So Sandy, now we're on this topic of denial, and so here's Ron Johnson on Friday, and he's saying, well, you know, if we want to do anything to fix what's going on with crime and all the issues that are impacting and affecting, you know, people, the first thing we've got to do is make sure that we give parents and access more school choice. And as if somehow the answer to what you and I are talking about, that American dream, at the end of that, certainly higher education plays a role in it. But everybody's not going.
Well, he's talking about secondary education.
Yeah. But to somehow be so out of line with what really is going on, and that's denial. Because if he wasn't in denial, he would agree with you and I that statistics will bear out what we are talking about here.
Well, that's
not delusional.
Well, you asked earlier in the show about why is it that people would be in denial? Why would you do that? Well, clearly it's to separate yourself from the problem and to basically point a finger at those who are part of the problem to attribute the problem to them, okay? To those who are experiencing that. So that's a big deal. That's a big part of this whole private school, choice school concept. Because what they're pointing at is the fact that public schools across the country in major urban areas tend to have results coming out of those public schools which are not as good as the results coming out of the suburban schools that surround them. Well, there's a big difference in the socioeconomic status and the condition of the students going to school in the urban setting as compared to the suburban setting.
Well, a blind person could see that.
Well, you'd think.
But
it's much easier to deny that it's the social and economic conditions that cause the problem, and there's a desire on the part of those who are outside the problem looking in to ignore, to look at the chicken and egg problem. Okay, there's a chicken and egg problem. Kids coming out of urban schools are not performing as well as kids coming out of suburban schools. So is it the school's fault, or is it the condition in the urban area? Is that the fault? And the consistency of this problem throughout the country would, of course, lead most scientists to say that it's the consistency of the situation more than it is the school districts, because these school districts are different. They aren't all the same. They're all run by in different ways and by different people. But if you're outside the problem and you want to deny that problem, you point at the schools and say, no, what we got to do is get rid rid of public schools.
All right, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Monday. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Join us. We'll be back.